Hello. Welcome to the Pandemic Pastoral Podcast, your podcast of choice to discuss all matters of the mind, soul, and heart. I'm Alex, your host, and I'm joined by Rob. Now, I'm a photographer, and that makes me a bit of an observer of people. I'm also, hopefully, an aspiring counselor. Rob is the minister at Andover Baptist Church, as well as having a nice Italian leather belt in judo. Is that correct, Rob?
No, Alex, that's definitely not correct. Although I quite like the idea of having an Italian leather belt somewhere along the way. That sounds great. No, never done judo, to my knowledge.
You're a taekwondo man, aren't you?
That's what I do. Yeah, that's what I do. Although, you never know. Maybe I'm learning judo moves without knowing it. I'm not experienced enough to know that yet.
And you're not allowed to swap the nice colored belts for a nice Italian leather belt.
I mean, not in the dojang, no. I mean, on a Saturday night, maybe, but that's about it, really.
So every week we open up about issues which everyone struggles with at one point or another. And hopefully, with a bit of our collective experience and insight, and definitely some humor, we can help you to realize that none of us are alone in any of this. Now, there are many topics to discuss, but if there's something you'd like to ask or to say, please email us at 3P, that's just the number 3 and the letter P, at andoverbaptist.org.uk, and we can try and discuss it here on the Pandemic Pastoral Podcast. This week, we are discussing a very serious subject, and that is death. According to the government, the official number of COVID-19 deaths stands at just over 38,000. So with around 1,000 to 2,000 new cases being added each day, the number of those dying from COVID-19 looks to be with us for a while. Now, today, we're going to have a closer look at how grief, loss, and bereavement affects us and our loved ones. And to discuss that, we are joined by Chris Porter, who is the senior minister at Andover Baptist Church. And I would say an incredible marathon runner. Is that correct, Chris?
No.
Well, hey, Chris, thank you so much for joining us. And today it is, I mean, I think all of our subjects have been quite serious, but I feel like talking about death is definitely one of the more serious subjects we're going to cover. And I thought what we would do is I would ask a series of questions and get some insight from the two of you, basically pull on your experience and your knowledge. So my first question for you gentlemen is, so what are some of the practical things you can do to help someone in those first few months of grieving?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I think when it comes to helping people, all of us get worried sometimes that we're going to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing when somebody's grieving. And that can sometimes mean, I think, we don't say anything or we don't make the phone call or whatever. And I think the first thing I would just want to say is just step into that situation. If we're trying to help somebody, a phone call, I'm here for you, you know, that kind of stuff is just really, really important. And we shouldn't be too worried about saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing. Certainly my experience, my own personal experience, but also of others, people are just so thankful that somebody would have taken the time to step in and just to check in on how people are doing. So I think when it comes to supporting other people, just being there and letting people know that you're there, even if you don't know quite the right thing to say, is the most important thing of all.
And I think also just the ability to listen rather than speak is probably the most important thing, because, you know, one of the most important parts of the grieving process is being able to express the kind of the pain or the loss or the shock or whatever's going on inside. And, you know, sometimes I think it's helpful that we don't always know what to say, because sometimes that's a clue for us that maybe we should say less and listen more.
Are there practical things? I know some people, you know, like to maybe make food for other people or things like that. Are there sort of practical things that you can do to help somebody who's grieving?
Yeah, I mean, I think anything like that is good. I think sometimes it can be a little bit overwhelming. My most personal experience of grief was when I was about 21 years old. My mother died of breast cancer. And I remember that the sheer number of cakes we received was absolutely overwhelming. And actually something we look back on and have a little bit of a giggle about in our family these days. But I mean, they were wonderful expressions of love. And fortunately, my dad had a really big freezer, so we were able to freeze lots of them. I think that those sorts of things are lovely and people really appreciate those. I love, there's this old Jewish tradition called sitting shiva. I don't know whether you guys have heard about that, but it's just this idea when somebody in Jewish culture passes away, people just go and sit with them for 7 days. And for me, I just think, I'm not suggesting that we go and physically sit with people for 7 days, but metaphorically, just being with people and letting people know that you're with them. And as you are with them, you spot perhaps the practical things that might be helpful.
And I think, you know, there's a sense in which we just need to realize how long the grieving process can take. Just a practical thing that I think is great is, you know, when people send cards, those are the kinds of things people often keep after a bereavement and keep looking at. So sometimes I think to myself, you know, a phone call is great, but a card probably is significantly better because somebody can reread it whenever they're feeling low. And, you know, it can keep encouraging them with the same words that you penned once, because it just signifies thoughtfulness, I think. I think they're great. You know, flowers are nice at the beginning, but again, flowers die fairly early and have to be thrown out. Conversations kind of fade out of the memory because, you know, people don't remember a lot of what's going on during a bereavement. They're just in shock. And so practical things like a card is a really, really good idea because they last and they help over the long term.
So what would you say is the difference between healthy grieving and unhealthy grieving? And what can we do to spot the signs in that in other people?
Yeah, well, I think, Alex, there are some things I think that the world says to us about grieving, and we may even have said to people, which I'm not sure are very healthy. So, you know, I think either literally or in what we do, or the world can sometimes say to us, right, you know, move on too quickly. And I think that can be a sign of unhealthy grieving, that rush to move on. And not take time, I think, can be really unhealthy. I think some of the things that the world says is that time will heal, and I'm not so sure that that's true. I think there's more to our healing in the grief process than just time. I think we need other people to help us. We need God to help us. I think sometimes the world says to us, you know, don't talk about it, or don't express your feelings, or don't talk about the person who you've lost. And actually, I think completely the opposite is true. I think when we're taking funerals, I want to encourage the people to talk about the person that they've lost. I want them to share their memories. I want, even on the day of the funeral itself, people to have a smile as they remember the person concerned. Because I think all of those things are really important and very healthy in the grieving process. I think shutting down, not talking about the person because it might be too upsetting, and rushing to move on, I think they're very unhealthy.
I think, yeah, absolutely, Chris. I think any attempt to suppress any of the emotions that go on through grief can be unhealthy. And, you know, you see that quite often because, you know, grief is confusing. Everybody kind of expects certain elements of grief. But one of the major sort of phases of grief is anger, for example. People feel very, very angry either at the loss or at how it happened. And I know a lot of people who have tried to suppress that because they feel that somehow that's wrong. And so they don't really deal with it. And quite often people actually get caught up in that kind of stage of grieving whereby the anger never really gets processed. And so because of that, it's unresolved and they're unable to move on to a point of acceptance. So that quite often is an unhealthy sign to me when somebody's trying to suppress an emotion of any kind, whether it's anger or whether it's grief. You know, it doesn't matter. Any of those emotions that happen during the grieving process that are totally normal in grieving, even though they might feel very abnormal, they should not be suppressed.
I don't think we should try and manufacture feelings either. You know, I think people experience things in different ways. They experience them in waves. And actually, one day they might be full of joy remembering the person. And again, people can try and say, well, surely you shouldn't actually be feeling like that right now. Well, I don't think we should say that. I think that's okay. I think people should feel whatever they're feeling, and that's okay. And sometimes they may actually feel joy as they remember the person and then feel guilty about that because they're not feeling sad for a day or whatever. And again, I don't think people should be anxious about that.
I lost my, similar to you, Chris, I lost my mother to cancer when I was about 25. And my minister at the time, he sort of gave me a helpful picture. He said to me that grief is, it's a lot like the tides. It will never go away. Sometimes it will go far away and you will forget about it for a long time. And other times it will come rushing in and almost feels like it'll overwhelm you. But it will never go away because you will never stop loving that person and you will never stop missing that person.
Yeah, I think that's so true. You know, it's been nearly 30 years since my mum and you know, obviously, you know, I go through periods of time and I don't really think about it too much, but then something will happen, or you know, our kids will do something, or you know, whatever, and I'll think, oh, I wish she was here to see this, and then it'll just come back. And that's such a great picture. I love that. Really helpful.
I think it also highlights the danger in our culture that comes from, you know, well-meaning people who say things like they'll always be with you, you know, they'll be with you in your heart or your mind. And, you know, while that is a well-meaning statement, perhaps, and perhaps a philosophy that a lot of people embrace, the truth is they're not with us, and that's the problem. The problem is staring us in the face. The problem is trying to deal with the fact that that person is gone. And, you know, the more people tell us to almost ignore that fact, the harder the grieving process becomes, I think.
Now, you both touch on sort of stages of grief, and I thought maybe you could kind of unpack that or explain that more, because I've certainly kind of heard it said to me that there are sort of, I think, five stages of grief, something like that. What are the stages of grief?
Yeah, like you said, there's five. I think the important thing is to recognize they don't always come in order, and sometimes they go backwards and forwards. So it's not like it's five neat stages, but there are five telltale signs that you're going through the grieving process. So, I mean, the first one is shock, and that one is usually right at the beginning, because the reality is none of us are ever prepared for death. And so, you know, shock can be seen in people sort of just absolutely not able to cope with the news at all. You know, some people faint. Some people just can't talk. Some people are just overwhelmed with emotion and don't know how to process it. I think we all probably, in any interaction with someone who's recently been bereaved, will see that element rise very, very quickly at the beginning. Then beyond shock, usually denial follows. There's a sense in which this can't be happening. This person can't really be dead. This can't be happening to me. It can't have happened to them. And particularly that's very common when you didn't sort of witness the death, or it just came unexpectedly or suddenly. You know, perhaps somebody was in a car accident or something, and you're literally being informed by somebody in the family that this person is now dead. You just really struggle to believe it, and that's really normal, believe it or not. You know, you can completely trust a family member, but when they tell you someone has died, you just don't necessarily believe it. Your brain really struggles to understand how that's even possible. So yeah, it goes from shock to denial quite often. Then that's usually followed by grief. And that's really the outpouring of emotions. That's the normal kind of breakdown point where it sets in, and all of the pain of that loss really just kind of hits you. And then, as I said earlier, that's usually followed by some form of anger and a frustration at the fact that this person is gone, a frustration at the circumstances of their death, a frustration that somebody couldn't save them or do more, or that someone is to blame for this. And, you know, all kinds of anger. Sometimes it's directed at yourself for things that you haven't said or done, or things you have said or done that you wish you hadn't said or done. Perhaps, you know, a conversation that you had just before the person died that you wish now you hadn't had, and now you blame yourself for it. All those kinds of things are fairly normal in the process. And then the final stage is acceptance, which is the point at which you're able to process those emotions and begin to move on with your life. And like Chris said, I use that term very loosely, because it's a process. It's not an event. You don't come to a point where suddenly you're okay. It's just accepting the fact that this person has died and you have to live the rest of your life and trying to do the best with that. And there comes a point where perhaps the grief and the anger are no longer as overwhelming as they were. You can function in similar ways to the way that you did before. And so that's really the stage where you've come to accept the fact that this death has happened, and that the, you know, life beyond this person's presence in your life is possible, even though it will continue to be difficult. And like you say, Alex, comes in waves.
As Rob rightly pointed out, these are sort of cycles. You know, you're not going to necessarily go through each of those steps sequentially. You know, you're going to go to and fro and back and forward, and you're going to feel them in the waves, Alex, that you talked about earlier, in the tides.
What would you say to someone who's grieving and is experiencing feelings that sort of go beyond that, that maybe the event has kind of sort of released or unpacked many other things that they definitely don't fit into just those five boxes.
We would probably all say, all of us here, go and talk to somebody about that. And if your grief is overwhelming, or you're going through emotions, this is stirring up things that are beyond, you know, your capacity to deal with friends and that kind of stuff. Go and find somebody who does this professionally. Alex, I know you know that, you know, we have this counselling service at Andover Baptist Church, and I know that service over the years has had lots of people who have tried to process their grief, and it's been really helpful in all of that. So, you know, I think all of us would want to say we have all tapped into that kind of help and support in the past, and we would be huge fans of that, and just really encourage people to do that, to help them through that. Through that process,
you know, it's important to recognize that death is a trauma. Bereavement is a trauma, and trauma is complex. You know, trauma brings out all kinds of different emotions that maybe are not connected to the event themselves, but the feelings that you feel during a trauma often trigger other memories, other events that might seem completely unrelated, but your brain maybe hasn't processed those properly. And so, you know, just like Chris said, it's important to kind of talk with someone about that. Even if you think to yourself, this just sounds so unbelievably irrational, it's not irrational. It's just a confusing time because your brain is struggling to process all of those emotions and to kind of make sense of them, really, and make sense of all of these life experiences that have made you feel similar ways.
Under normal circumstances, and we definitely aren't living under normal circumstances at the moment, when someone passes away, having a funeral, you know, in my experience at least, was a really wonderful way of celebrating someone's life and consoling with each other, and to some degree, not achieving closure, because closure is a complicated word, but it was an important kind of stepping stone, a part of that kind of grieving journey. But at the moment, and for the past, you know, 3 months, we've been under lockdown, and people haven't been able to necessarily have funerals. So, what advice or encouragement could you offer to a family in that situation?
So I think that's one of the hardest and saddest things about this whole season, really, for me. Just knowing people, friends, others who have lost somebody through this season, not necessarily from COVID-19, but from other things, and either them not being able to see that person in hospital, or not being able to have the funeral that they would want to have been able to have. People are having funerals, and the places where you can have funerals are doing as best a job as they possibly can in making those available for live streams, so that people, family members, can join in with them. You know, you are allowed some close family members in the funeral. And I've heard some wonderful stories, actually, about people who have had really lovely funerals, even though only a very small number of people have been able to be physically there. They have live streamed, and people have been able to join in with those from all over the world. So that's the best that we can do in this situation right now. I know lots of people who have lost loved ones during this period are thinking that as soon as we're able to have bigger gatherings again, they'll have Thanksgiving services, celebrations, remembering parties. And again, I think all of those would be wonderful things. And I think we're ready. I think Rob and I would have said that, you know, as a church, we would want to help anybody who would want to do that kind of thing post all of this and us being able to gather again. I think we're sort of certainly thinking that will be in our plans and on our agenda to help and support people with once all of this is done.
Now, we're all Christians and we all go to the same church, which is how we know each other. And so our experience of death and grief is definitely seen through the eyes of knowing that we love Jesus and that we will see him in heaven, and that those who also believe will see him in heaven. And so when someone passes, to some degree, there is a sense of hope knowing that we will see that person again in heaven, which we know is a truth, but is sometimes a difficult truth to share with someone who's going through grief and who is, as you say, maybe angry or who may not necessarily appreciate hearing that. So I was just wondering from both of you, what you would do in that situation. What are the comforting and helpful things you can say to both a Christian and also to a non-Christian?
Well, that's such a good question. Well, I mean, to the Christian, obviously, you know, we are sharing that hope that there is a life beyond this one, that belief, that faith that we have, that death is not the end, that there is a something to come. And obviously that does bring hope. And again, even just some sense of joy. And I've even, you know, particularly perhaps when somebody's older or they've been suffering or struggling, you know, there is a sense that there's a release into this wonderful thing that comes after death for those people. And often loved ones will really value and appreciate that and feel a sense of peace about that. I think for the non-Christian, it's harder, and that I think depends completely on where those people are at. My personal belief is that God will do everything he can to have us with him in heaven for eternity. Now, I'm not for a minute suggesting that doesn't mean we don't have faith, but I think God gives people every opportunity through Jesus to come to faith and to share that eternity in heaven. And we don't know what people will be experiencing in their last moments. And so I think there still is potentially a hope that somebody can have come to faith, even in their last moments. So if it's appropriate, you can talk about that. So that's some of the things that I would talk about. And I would also talk about the fact that, you know, that is up to God. So that isn't up to us. That is up to God. And to being able to leave that in his hands, I think.
I think you're absolutely right, Chris, in the sense that we don't know, and it's okay to believe in the mercy of God in those situations because God is merciful. And, you know, it is a source of comfort to people to know that God is merciful, particularly if they're not Christians. Maybe that's the most important thing we could share with them, is that God is merciful, because at the heart of the Christian faith is the fact that God gave his life for our sake. Mm. And so if you're going to get to know God, and we believe that that's the main purpose of everyone's life, is to really have a relationship with God and know, you know, who he is and what he's about. Well, then you need to understand that he's an incredibly loving, merciful person that wants a relationship with every single one of us. And so I think there is a comfort in that. I also think quite often, you know, these conversations depend on where the person is at, because, you know, if somebody is going through bereavement and they're not a Christian, the chances are, actually, for me, the most helpful conversation I can have with them is not necessarily about, you know, the afterlife of the person who's gone, but it's about where God is with us in our pain. And quite often that's where I will direct the conversation, because I think, you know, when somebody experiences loss, it's a horrific experience to go through. And whether you're a Christian or not, you need help and support through that process. And just understanding that even if you're not a Christian, God grieves for your pain and is with you in that pain. I think that's a really important starting point for a conversation. And I think, you know, just knowing that even if you are in a place where you have had your back to God for years and years, God is still there for you and loves you through that process of pain and bereavement, because he understands it himself. You know, he knows what loss is all about. The Christian faith tells us that he lost his one and only son. When you remind them of the love of God for them and the fact that God is always with us, even in the dark times, and that, you know, the Bible is absolutely filled of examples of God coming alongside us through the valley of the shadow of death, through grief, and leading us out the other side, I think it kind of paints a more holistic picture of who God is and how he might be relevant to their lives at this point in time. But either way, it's not going to hurt someone, you know, to know that they are loved is always a good thing.
I think that's so helpful. Now, before we sign off, I've had a lot of questions here, but is there anything that either of you two would like to add?
I think that there's just a couple of things that I would reiterate that we probably did pick up on earlier, that if people are listening to this and they're going through grief, and they are struggling to process and to cope with it, to ask somebody to help, to get in touch. It doesn't have to be the ABC Counseling Service, but there are plenty of others. But, you know, the ABC Counseling Service is there and is available and is helpful, will be really helpful to people. So I'd really want to reiterate that. And I think I'd really want to reiterate that just allow your emotions to be what they are. You know, you don't have to manufacture emotion if you're not feeling it, and also you don't have to suppress it if you are. And if you're trying to help somebody who's grieving, the best thing that you can do is remember that sitting shiver thing. Just to sit with them, be present with them. And a lot of people who are grieving, you know, have a lot of stuff to do in those first week or two that they've lost somebody. There's a lot of practical stuff. It's after that often that that immediate support falls away a little bit. And just to continue to be there for people and just checking in with people, you know, after those first 2 or 3 weeks is a really, really important thing if we're trying to support people.
I think it's probably just worth mentioning as well that because of the unusualness of the coronavirus situation, there are advice and support documents out there that, that help when somebody goes through a death at this time. If you go to the government website, gov.uk, there's actually a coronavirus funeral support section that tells you what to do, because obviously situations are a little bit different to normal. And so it tells you how funerals can take place and can't take place. It tells you things like the funeral needs to happen quickly, because obviously these are unusual circumstances. It tells you about possible financial support that might be available to you because of the situation. It tells you where you can get bereavement support. And it just kind of helps you through the process of dealing with the practicalities so that you can get that done sooner and actually have time just to process yourself.
You two gentlemen have been outstanding. That has been incredibly helpful to me. And I hope to anyone listening today that these two fine souls have proved both an encouragement, a comfort, and an inspiration. So thank you, Chris, for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
And Rob, always good having you here with me on the podcast. So all remains for me to say really is to say thank you once again for listening to the Pandemic Pastoral Podcast. We hope we've been good company, and we hope you'll join us again next week. Please click on that subscribe button and share the link or the app around. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or queries or any comments, please email us at 3p@andoverbaptist.org.uk. There are other resources out there. Rob touched on one of them there by going to the government website. But just generally, if you're struggling at this time, you don't obviously have to wait a whole week for our podcast. You can contact Andover Baptist Church directly if you want. You can contact our counseling services there. And of course, if anything far more serious is happening, do not be afraid to phone 999 if you know someone who's struggling really badly at the moment. They are there to help. And of course, there's the Samaritans as well, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's a free service. Do contact them. Their number is 116-123. That's 116-123. So there really are many, many different ways for you to be heard and to get help. And we look forward to seeing you next week. And remember that you are not alone out there.